Take your Bibles and
turn to the right of Matthew. Matthew chapter 16, we found in reference to the Lord when he said that I will build my church. The opportunities that God has provided, that even from before the foundation of the world, it was determined that through the church, the manifold wisdom of God would be made known. And so we've been looking in reference to the matter of the importance of the church in several aspects, the nature of the church, of what we are, what that entails as far as being the flock of God, being the church of God, being that of the household of God. All of them are terms that are descriptive of responsibilities that we have as children of God. This is an opportunity that God does not force on anyone, but that he does offer that particular gift for those who have a desire to serve him in spirit and truth. And so we're trying to expand our understanding of what it is to be a part of the church that belongs to Christ, and as a result of that, that we can have a great appreciation for these opportunities that we have when we come together. And so thus far we have considered the church in reference to its nature, its origin, and the references that were made as far as the prophecies were concerned in reference to the church. And so at this time we want to direct our attention to the church as it applies to authority. Authority is something that within, as what the Lord stated in Matthew chapter 28, verse 18, when he called his disciples together, he's about to give them the what man has coined as the Great Commission that would go into all the world. And he puts that on a basis when he says that all authority has been given unto me in heaven and on earth. All authority. And so when we think about the matter of authority, we want to consider just exactly what's involved as far as our responsibilities consist of in reference to being subjects to that authority. Authority is defined or refers to a claim of legitimacy, justification, and right to exercise that power. They have a right to do that. We've seen in reference to many aspects of our society within in the police and government, within what they do, of whether they have a right to exercise their better judgments, if you will, or lack thereof, on us as individuals, as we are part of the nation within which we live. And so authority refers to a claim of legitimacy, of justification, and right to exercise that power. By what right do you do that? And that's what the chief priest had asked of the Lord after he had cleansed the temple. They said, by what authority do you do these things? Who gave you the right to do that? Well, by what legitimacy do you have to operate the way you did? Also, liberty of doing as one pleases, the ability or strength with which one is endued, the right to exercise power. Now, there's a difference in authority. This power that's involved here gives you the strength, gives you the ability to do it. Sometimes you may have the authority to do something, but you don't have the ability to enforce it. Well, we find that within the authority of the Lord, that he has the right and the ability or strength with which he has to exercise that power. Also, authority is a power of choice, the liberty of doing as one pleases. These are different definitions that are applied to that of authority. What is it? When you talk about the authority of the Lord, what does that convey to the mind in reference to his abilities when he said, all authority has been given me in heaven and on earth? Freedom and power to command and to enforce obedience, and to have possession of and rule and dominion over. All of these are different definitions that are given to authority and power under certain conditions. And that's the way the English language is developed, as well as others, that you will have different definitions depending upon the text and context within which a term is used. But all in all, we find that this matter of authority, that authority is therefore the right, liberty, and freedom to act and rule. Thus, authority is in the action of God in some different areas. And we'll look at those in just a moment. So when we think about authority and we look at the reference to the government, do they have the authority? And that authority is not man-made. That authority is from God.
If the authority is no higher than that of man, then it's simply a matter of the opinions of a group of men or whatever the case may be to rule over others. But the fact that God, as a supreme ruler, has given that authority and has given those laws, then when we render obedience to the government, we're also doing that to our God, because He's the one that established it for our good always. And so when we think about this matter of authority, the right, liberty, and freedom to act and rule, thus we find that it's the action of God, one in commanding. In the writing of Genesis, in Genesis chapter 2, verse 16, goes all the way back from the beginning of where God has this authority. He never has relinquished His right and liberty and freedom to act in the life of mankind simply as a virtue of the Creator over the creature. That's one reason why He has that authority and power. He made us. He made us for a purpose, and He intends for us to fulfill that purpose, which is ultimately, as the writing of Isaiah identifies, to that of bringing glory unto His name. He made us for a purpose, and He has a greater purpose beyond this life for what we can become when Jesus comes and He takes the kingdom and delivers it up to the Father. In Genesis chapter 2 and verse 16, Adam and Eve had been created, had been placed in the garden to dress and to keep it. They had all the things of what they needed. They had been given the instruction of God concerning this particular issue. And Jehovah God commanded the man, saying, "Of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou may eateth thereof, thou shalt surely die." And so in reference to that, we find that this authority gave God the right, liberty, and freedom to act and to rule, and He also has the ability and the power and the right to exercise consequences to those who fail to do it. And so He gives the law. And He says that you have all the garden. You have everything of which I have created. It's for you. It is for your consumption. But the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you don't even touch it. It is not within your right, your freedom, your authority to partake of it. And in the day that you do, you will surely die. So God had the right by virtue of creation to command Adam and Eve, and He holds that right to this day of His right to command His creatures to do as He has instructed, and it is for our good and for the good of all of those that we come into contact with. And we find also that this authority is the action of God in enforcing those laws. In the writing of Deuteronomy, in Deuteronomy chapter 28 and verse 15, these are the words that the Lord, through Moses, gave to the children of Israel before they go into the land of Canaan. It's always interested me that out of all of the things that God could reveal, what we have is what He chose for our learning, for our understanding, that we can be a people for His own possession. And here in verse 15, well, you go over to verse 1. He said, "It shall come to pass, if thou shalt hearken diligently unto the voice of Jehovah thy God, to observe to do all His commandments, which I command thee this day, that Jehovah thy God will set thee on high above all the nations of the earth." Dispensationally and on nations, He's going to elevate them. They will be elevated if they will keep the commandments that God has instructed them. "And all these blessings shall come upon thee and overtake thee if thou shalt hearken unto the voice of Jehovah thy God." And so God identified that you'll be blessed in the city, you'll be blessed in the field, the fruit of your body, so your children, the fruit of the ground, the fruit of the beast, the increase of thy cattle and young of thy flock. "Blessed shall be thy basket and thy kneading trough. Blessed shalt thou be when thou comest in, and blessed shalt thou be when thou goest out." So all of these blessings of every aspect of your life that you could consider. God told Israel, if you will keep my statutes, if you will keep my laws and observe to do these commandments, which I tell you, you will be blessed. You'll be spiritually prosperous. You'll be physically prosperous if you will do as I've instructed you to do. But, verse 15, it shall come to pass, if thou shalt not hearken unto the voice of Jehovah thy God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. Cursed shalt thou be in the city, and in the field, and in the basket of thy kneading trough, and of the fruit of thy body, and the fruit of the ground, the increase of the cattle, the young of the flock. Cursed shalt thou be when thou cometh in, and cursed shalt thou be when thou goeth out. And so you have just the opposite from the blessings. You're going to have to be cursed if you do not follow the commands of the Lord. Now what we understand is that this isn't a matter that the Lord is standing there with a hammer going to, you know, do the little gopher thing, whatever, when you do bad or when you do good, and rewards you with a little of this and takes away a little of that. We find that keeping the commandments of the Lord, that is the result. If you keep the commandments of the Lord, the result will be that you will be blessed. If you do not keep the commandments, which are given for our good always, that if we do not keep them, then the curses are going to come. We find that the Lord identifies, and we find it in life as well physically, as well as we do spiritually, that there's three avenues in which man responds. One of them deals with the matter of reward. That you give them a reward and they are willing to do that. They're willing to do something because of the reward that they're going to receive at the end of it. Or you have, on the other one, you have the matter of the punishment or the curse. And because in order to avoid that punishment, then they won't do what they're not supposed to be doing to start with. And so it is used as motivators. Here's the blessing. Here's the curse. Both of those are going to motivate you in one fashion or another. But what the Lord wants is love. He wants it done out of love, not what we usually consider but between men. But as 1 Corinthians 13 identifies, a specific type of love that is within our devotion to our God and out of love. And that's what the Lord wants. We find parents want the same thing. They will use either reward or punishment with their children in order to get them to behave and to respond in a positive manner. The choice is theirs. If you do this, you will be rewarded. If you don't, you will suffer the punishment. Parents use that in whatever fashion they do all the time. But what they want is love. They want the children to do what they're doing out of love for the parents and what is good and beneficial for them. And God does the same thing. And so when Israel would sin, he would take away the rain to get them to understand their need that they have for God working within their life. And the writing of Acts indicates that he sends us rain and fruitful seasons. He's manifested that. There have been times that when man would get, as it was with the Amorites, to such a degree of wickedness and iniquity that he would send in others in order to punish them for those particular deeds. He did that when Israel went into the land of Canaan. It wasn't just to provide Israel with a place to live. It was a judgment of God upon an ungodly people that had no means of returning to righteousness. And we find that when Judah, the southern tribe of Israel, transgressed the will of God, God sent Babylon and sent Nebuchadnezzar as his hammer, as his arm, against Judah because of their iniquities and their sins, and they suffered from that. What he wanted was their love for what God had provided within the creation of the existence of them, not only nationally as a nation, but as a people. And so that's what God will do. He has the right by authority in his action, in commanding, enforcing, and instructing.
He gave them the laws, the writing of Exodus, in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 4, when the Ten Commandments, if you will, were given. And these are laws that you find in every nation. Even those that will deny God, they have laws of righteousness, of what's right, what's acceptable, what's not. And here we find that God didn't just say that you be good. He gave them laws. He instructed them by His authority in what they should be involved in. And therefore in verse 4, He said, "Thou shalt not make unto thee a graven image, nor any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the waters under the sea. Thou shalt not bow down thyself unto them, nor serve them." And so there's the qualified aspects of it. You do not make these images that you might worship them, that you will fall down and worship them. "For I, Jehovah thy God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children, upon the third and upon the fourth generation of them that hate me, and showing love and kindness unto thousands of them that love me and keep my commandments." And there again, it falls into that category of God commanding, enforcing, and now He instructs them as to how they are to live. And that's what Exodus chapter 20 in reference to the Ten Commandments involved. Well, in the writing of Deuteronomy, in Deuteronomy chapter 4, Deuteronomy 4 and verse 4, we find this instruction carried out. Ye that did cleave unto Jehovah your God are alive, every one of you, this day. Behold, I have taught you statutes and ordinances, even as Jehovah my God commanded me, that ye should do so in the midst of the land, whether ye go to possess it. So Moses says that God gave me this instruction to give to you as you go into that land. Keep therefore and do them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples that shall hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there that hath a God so nigh unto them as Jehovah our God is, whensoever we call upon Him? And that great nation is there. And what great nation is there that hath statutes and ordinances so righteous as all this law which I set before you this day? This is the way to live. This is the best way to live. This is what is righteous, which is right wise. And all of these laws dealt with their relationship to their Creator and their relationship one to another. And when individuals violate those laws, it's other individuals that suffer, depending on which end of that you may be, is a violation of those laws that were put together for our good always, which is what Moses had identified when he gave the law unto them, that they might enjoy the blessings of chapter 6 of Deuteronomy, verse 24. "And Jehovah commanded us to do all these statutes, to fear Jehovah our God for our good always, that He might preserve us alive as at this day." And so these laws are given for the benefit of His creation within the writing of the Ephesian letter. This goes back to the Ten Commandments, the laws that were given in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 1, when Paul said, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise." Of the Ten Commandments, this is the first one that had a promise to it. You honor your father and your mother. He said, "that it may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth." Right, so there was a promise, a command with a promise, that for to the extension of your life, you honor your father and mother. That is going to set within your mind thought, set within your mind, a responsibility that you have in life to those who gave you life and nurtured you when you were not able to take care of yourself and would have perished had it not been for them. that brought you up and provided you with the food, the raiment, the shelter that has been given you. And how do you repay that? Because Timothy, Paul told Timothy that a child has a responsibility to requite to their parents, to pay them back for what they gave to you when you were in your youth and you were coming up in your life. And so this matter of what the Lord had said in Exodus chapter or Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 40, when he made that statement that you that which I command thee this day, that it may be, go well with thee and with thy children after thee, that thou mayest prolong thy days. How far ahead do we see within our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren? When Abraham was given the promise of the land promise, and he was given all that, God was going to make of him a mighty nation. And he gives him all of these blessings, and he says basically, well, you won't see them. This is going to be 400 years, four generations down the line before this comes about. As far as this world is concerned, you're going to be dead and gone. Most people today would say, well, what do I care? Let them fend for themselves. What do I care? But Abraham had a concern. Two of them, one of them for his lineage, and the other one for the righteousness of God. Because God instructed him to instruct his children in righteousness and in justice. And then those of Israel were to teach their children when they'd rise up, when they'd walk in the way, when they'd lay down at night. You instruct them in the ways of the Lord. And it is for our good always that that instruction has been given. We also find that it gives God the right, liberty, and freedom to act and rule in the areas of the right to expect obedience. In the writing of the Roman letter, Romans chapter 9 and verse 20. Romans 9 verse 20. When Paul said, nay, but O man, who art thou that replieth against God? Shall the thing formed say to him that formed it, why didst thou make me thus? Or hath not the potter a right over the clay from the same lump to make one part a vessel unto honor and another unto dishonor? What if God, willing to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering vessels of wrath fitted unto destruction? His long suffering of what he did. And that he might make known the riches of his glory upon vessels of mercy which he had before prepared unto glory. Even us, whom he also called, not from the Jews only, but also from the Gentiles. And so here's God had the right in reference to that, to expect obedience. And he would exercise his wrath against those who failed to serve him and put his righteousness and his grace upon those that would serve him. In the writing of Titus, in Titus 2 and verse 15, when Paul left Titus in Crete, we find that he gave him instructions regarding the brethren of how they were to behave themselves. And he identified that in verse 15, these things speak and exhort. Now we find the exhortation is that of encouraging to a proper type of life and to reprove or to tell the fault. You tell them the fault. Here's where you have faltered in reference to that. And so you encourage them to live a good life. You identify their faults when and reprove them when it's contrary to the will of God. And that you speak these things with all authority, is what the American Standard says, or with all commandment. Let no man despise thee. What we find of what Titus taught the people wasn't a matter that this is a good idea. You teach it with all authority. Here's what God has instructed you to do. It's not arbitrary. It's not something you're going to be able to debate about. Here's what God said. Here's what you do. And Titus was to teach the word of God, expecting his hearers to obey it. And so God has the right in reference to the authority that of commanding, enforcing, instructing, and the right to expect obedience. The Lord identified when he was talking in the writing of Luke, in Luke chapter 7 and verse 8, that here was a Gentile, a man that was not under the law, but he sure understood the law. And in chapter 7 and verse 8, well, verse 6, Jesus went with them, and when he was now not far from the house, a centurion sent friends to him, saying unto him, Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof. Wherefore neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but say the word, and my servant shall be healed. I'm not coming to you. I'm not worthy to do that. I'm not worthy to have you come to me. All you have to do is say it. Say the word, and he'll be healed. For I also, here's what the centurion said, what he understood. I also am a man set under authority, having under me soldiers. And I say to this one, go, and he goeth. And to another, come, and he cometh. And to my servant, do this, and he doeth it. And when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turned and said unto the multitude that followed him, I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. And they that were sent returned to the house, found the servant whole. Jesus did not have to be there. The sick servant did not have to be with Jesus. His power extended beyond that which was at the present, and he was able to exercise that and to heal that servant, and the centurion knew it, that he has the right in order to do so by the authority that he exercises. Now, the problem that we have with authority lies in the fact that nobody wants to be under authority. I don't know how many times, and you've probably heard individuals say that nobody is going to tell me to do anything. That I'm my own man. That I'll make my own decisions. And there are penal institutions full of people that have that attitude. And now somebody is telling them what to do every minute of their life. When to get up, when to go to bed, when they get to go outside, when they have to come back in, where they're going to sit, what they're going to wear. And it all comes from that attitude that nobody's going to tell me what to do. And the problem that people have with authority is that they don't want to be under authority. We want to be the authority. We want to be the one we don't want the tail wagging the dog, see, with that sort of thing. Well, we find in the writing of Matthew, in Matthew chapter 22, that we find of where people had that particular attitude. When they came to the Lord, and they took counsel in reference of how they were going to ensnare the Lord, and they sent to him disciples, the Pharisees did, with the Herodians. Now, the Pharisees and the Herodians. The Herodians believed that the Herod should rule. The Pharisees didn't believe they should rule. There was no common ground between the Herodians and the Pharisees. The only common ground was they both hated Jesus. That was it. That's kind of what allies do. We have allies. That doesn't mean they like us. They just mean that they hate somebody else more than they like us. And that's how these allegiances are brought about. And that's what took place with the Pharisees and the Herodians. And they said, Teacher, we know that thou art true and teachest the way of God in truth and careth not for anyone. And they're flattering with their lips. And try. We know you're a good teacher, for thou regardest not the person of men. Tell us therefore, what thinkest thou? Is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar or not? And Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, Why make ye trial of me, ye hypocrites? Show me the tribute money. And they brought unto him a denarius, and he saith unto them, Whose is the image and superscription? He didn't have the money. They did. Show me this money that you're talking about. Should we pay taxes to Caesar or not? The Herodians said, Yes. The Pharisees said, No. So it kind of puts Jesus in a bad spot. If Jesus says no, then he's against the Herodians. He's against the government. If he says yes, then he's against the Jews. And it, to them, in their mindset, it requires him to make a decision that's going to get him in trouble. And he said unto him, they said unto him, the superscription said unto him, Caesar's. Then saith he unto them, render therefore unto Caesar's the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. And when they heard it, they marveled and left him and went away. Here was a matter of where they didn't want to pay taxes to the government anyway. And they're looking for justification. They didn't like being under the authority, the Pharisees didn't, of being under the authority of the Roman government. We also find that in religion, that there are conflicts that exist within the government of God's dealing with the law and how people responded to it. And here in Numbers chapter 16, it's Korah, the son of Izhar, and the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and on, and the sons of Pelet, sons of Reuben, took men. So you have the tribe of Reuben, you have these individuals, but you also have those of Kohath, who was the son of Levi, which was the same son from whence Aaron and his sons came, and also Moses. And so if we deal with Kohath, that Kohath is upset because Moses has this authority. And in verse 2, and they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the congregation, called to the assembly, men of renown. And they assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and said unto them, who do you think you are? It's basically what they said in short. Because they said, ye take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and Jehovah is among them. Wherefore then lift ye up yourselves above the assembly of Jehovah? Who do you think you are? They didn't want to be under that authority. They didn't want to be told by Moses and Aaron as to what to do. And we find that what had transpired between Kohath and these groups, they were ultimately swallowed up by the earthquake. That Moses identified that if I don't speak of in reference to the Lord, then so be it. But if I do, the earth will open up and consume them. And that's exactly what happened. And so we find in reference to it that religiously they didn't want Moses to rule them. And they said, well, we're just as good as you are. The whole assembly is holy. We're of the tribe of Kohath, just like you are. So who are you? And so we find that many do not want to be under the authority of God in religion. They want to be able to pick and choose their own. We find that if you take it to a higher scale, sometimes individuals, in the writing of Exodus, in Exodus chapter 5, Exodus chapter 5 and verse 2. Let me see what I have here. Pharaoh said, who is Jehovah that I should hearken unto his voice to let Israel go? Who is he? Moses comes and said, you let Israel go. And he said, who's Jehovah that I should do that? He's at the highest scale as far as authority and power is concerned. And he would not submit to that of the Lord. In the writing of Jeremiah, Jeremiah chapter 5 verse 1, this is interesting. Because Jeremiah had gone to the poor people. He had gone to those that he thought would receive the will of God. And so when he found that they didn't, he decided that he would go to those that were in the upper echelon, the wiser, the educated. They will hear it. If these won't, these will hear. And he said, the Lord told him, run ye to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem, and see now and know and seek in the broad places thereof, if ye can find a man, if there be any that doeth justly and seeketh truth, I'll pardon her. Find me one that does. And though they say, as Jehovah liveth, surely they swear falsely. O Jehovah, do not thine eyes look upon truth. Thou hast stricken them, but they are not grieved. Thou hast consumed them, but they have refused to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than a rock. They have refused to return. Then I said, surely these are poor. They are foolish, for they know not the way of Jehovah, nor the law of their God. I will get me unto the great men, and will speak unto them, for they know the way of Jehovah, and the law of their God. But these with one accord have broken the yoke and burst the bonds. Broken the yoke and burst the bonds. They turned away from the law and the precepts of God. Poor didn't want it. The great didn't want it. God said, that's why I'm destroying it. Find me a man that will stand up and do that. Well, we find the proper attitude toward authority in when we look at these deals with the matter of one of the government. What type of an attitude should we have toward the government? And these are God's words. He tells us how to respond and what He will use as a gauge or an indicator to our obedience to Him. In verse 13 of Romans, He said, let every soul be in subjection to the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. And the powers that be are ordained of God. Therefore, he that resists the power withstandeth the ordinance of God, and they that withstand shall receive to themselves judgment. For the rulers are not a terror to the good work, but to the evil. And wouldst thou have no fear of the power, that authority they have? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have the praise from the same. For he is a minister of God to thee for good. But if thou doest that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, an avenger for wrath to them that doeth evil. And every time that term sword is used in the scripture, it refers to a death blow. Death blow. God said he has put the government in charge of that. We should fear that authority, but recognize that authority, that when they do so, they are operating as ministers of God. 1 Peter 2 and verse 13, be subject unto every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake, whether to the king as supreme or unto governors as sent by him for vengeance on evildoers and for praise to them that do well. God said that's the attitude you should have toward the government. In religion, in the writing of Deuteronomy, in Deuteronomy 6, verse 24, as we noted, that what God has given to us, He has given to us for our good always. Within the New Testament, within the writing of the Hebrew letter, in Hebrews chapter 13, we find that the Lord, through the prophet, gives instruction to the people. When He stated in verse 17, obey them. Well, verse 7. Remember them that had the rule over you, men that spake unto you the word of God, and consider the issue of their life, imitate their faith. And then verse 17, obey them that have the rule over you, and submit to them, for they watch in behalf of your soul, as they that shall give account. Not account of themselves, they'll give an account of you. How did you respond? That they may do this with joy and not with grief, for this were unprofitable for you. Religion, how do we respond to that? And also within that, having an attitude that was expressed by Eli and ultimately by that of Samuel. Joshua had made a similar statement within his service, but in 1 Samuel chapter 3, verses 1 through 10, the event was that Samuel had been brought in. He was being reared by Eli, who was functioning as the priest. And we find that the Lord called unto Samuel three times. He called him, and Samuel went into Eli and said, you called. Eli says, no, I didn't call. And so went back to bed. The Lord called him again. He goes back to Eli. And we find that Eli perceived that it was of Jehovah that this event was transpiring. So 1 Samuel chapter 3, we find that he called as other times, "Samuel, Samuel." Then Samuel said, "Speak, for thy servant heareth." That's the attitude that we ought to have in reference to our service unto the Lord. We have great opportunities in reference to that of the body of Christ and recognizing the authority of God to instruct us and command us and give us our responsibilities as to what we are to do, not only what we are to do, but how we're to do it, and the attitude that we are to manifest when we do it. Not seeing it as a burden. What is it I've got to do now? But one as what would the Lord have me do? So we're looking at that in reference to authority. And Lord willing, next week we're going to consider this aspect of this establishment of the authority that God has set forth for us to know and to do. We know what it is. We know what the problems are. And then we're going to look at man's authority, different areas, and then how to establish the establishment of authority and how essential it is within what we do, what we practice, what we teach. Everything that we do falls under that category of the Lord's commands. Okay.